Welcome to another UCTV.tv podcast presented by University of California Television.
Ogun, oh, what is ours? L'insens et titamo.
This is a group prayer organized in the Sean Morris Plaza. And I always just find that I found in my experience in Haiti that I'm constantly surprised with both the resilience of the people and just some of the amazing scenes that I've encountered. Like this was such a magical moment to see an entire sea of people in prayer and unison, all the people that had come from the camps surrounding this plaza. Really incredible. And you know, I always look for these little moments too that told the story in a way that sort of went beyond the loud, bold photographs that kind of made the headlines. And this woman had to have her head shaved because of a wound that she had suffered during the earthquake on her head. And you know, in just my short time in getting to know Haiti and her people, you sort of understand what a sort of powerful sacrifice. I mean, Haitians are good-looking people. They really take care of themselves. And for this woman to have to sit out on the street corner and sort of suffer the indignity of having her head shaved, I don't know, it was a quiet, powerful image that told the story in a different way. And in the coming weeks, there was, you know, little to no public service. People were still, even 2 weeks on, people were still trapped in their homes, waiting outside their homes for medical attention. This was people in car 4 being taken away in a makeshift ambulance in the back of an old Suburban after having waited, I think, eight or 10 days for medical care. And this is this dancer, Fabien Jean, that Debbie Sontag followed over the course of the year. And I actually caught up with her in the middle of the year. Another photographer had photographed her early on. But she's a really incredible story. She had been in the shower when the earthquake happened and put on a towel and ran outside to save herself. And her house didn't collapse, but the wall that she took shelter next to outside collapsed on her and crushed her leg. But really an amazing woman. She's a dancer. And when she was treated, you know, all she told the doctor is, "I'm a dancer. Please do not amputate my leg. It's my livelihood. It's everything for me." She apparently had the wherewithal after she was injured in the earthquake to go back into her house and put on a nice dress and then go back out and seek medical attention. And this is during a food distribution in Cité Soleil. A lot of the photographers and most of the journalists, you know, I think especially early on, were pretty outraged at how slow it was, how slow the international community was in getting aid to Haiti. And Maggie and I talked about it a lot, that aid was there, it sat around, it sat at the airport. You know, and over the course of your day-to-day coverage, you are seeing a continuation of this tragedy and wondering when when is the help going to arrive. And you know, one of the ways that you try not to feel guilty about what you're doing, about being there and that you're there witnessing horrible things and not lending a hand, is that the work that you're producing is encouraging other people and encouraging broader support. And it was so frustrating to see how long it took for it to actually happen. And in the tent camps, they started taking hold all around Port-au-Prince. This was on the hills surrounding the Prime Minister's office near Pétionville. And almost 3 weeks into it, the streets were littered with rubble. Bodies still had not been picked up. People started burning buildings just in order to burn the bodies that were contained within them. And this last photo we have is the site of the mass grave in Titayin outside Port-au-Prince, where thousands of bodies were brought in the days following, or in the weeks following the earthquake. This is one of the first mourners to arrive at a mass funeral ceremony for the victims. All right, I had more to show you. I'm sorry I went slowly. Thank you very much.
I have to say, both because it's pertinent to the last excellent presentation and also to my own discussion, that the same divinities in Vodou who preside over death also preside over sexuality and rebirth. so that death is only part of a much larger drama in Haiti, and you can't stop at those images. You have to understand that right next to the skull is the phallus, and that death and rebirth are intimately connected. So I would just say, and by way of introducing myself a little bit and why I'm here today, that I first went to Haiti like a lot of other people that are participants in this excellent conference in 1986 in the wake of the collapse of the Duvalier regime. And I only went there thinking that I was getting footnotes for my real career, which was as an Africanist and a mythologist. And I wasn't in Haiti for very long before I realized that Haiti is a footnote to nothing, that Haiti is its own story. And I want to share that story with you a little bit today, particularly in looking at Vodou, which is, of course, Haiti's great mythology. I use that word mythology, strictly speaking, as true stories. And the role of the gods in Haitian history and as an inspiration for Haitian ritual and art is incalculably large. And I think some of that sense is caught by the title that I'm giving today to today's very brief presentation, Great Gods, Small Horses. It's a quote that Maya Deren uses in her absolutely seminal book, A Divine Horseman, when she quotes a Haitian proverb that says, great gods cannot ride small horses. And the metaphors, of course, are from spirit possession, where the gods are the horsemen and the human beings, the living beings, are the horses. And Haiti proves that that the horses are equal to the gods. And I take that as my inspiration for today. I started out with two images which I think tell an important story about the relationship between what I observed as the relationship between Haitians and their divinities. The top image is after a voodoo ceremony, and the heart with the snakes next to it would be recognized as the heart for the ever broken-hearted Erzeli Freda, the goddess of love and luxury and divinity, who's correlated with the Virgin Mary and who presides over life's little luxuries. And it's such an intimate scene. There's a Haitian saying, après bal, tambolou, after the dance, the drum is heavy, everyone is exhausted. But the important point, I think, in that picture is that the exhaustion is not something you bring home, because vodou is comfortable, and it's easy to fall asleep in a vodou temple. And so the man is with his wife or a partner looking on, I think, perhaps jealously. But in any case, both of them having a sense of intimacy, which I think describes the relationships between the vodou divinities, the Loa, and the people of Haiti. The bottom image is, I think, again, a comfort image. In this particular case, it's also taken in a vodou temple with an image of St. Clair, who's correlated with Aida Wedo, the rainbow. And note that in front of her is a television set, and to the side is a bike exerciser. Once again, I would say it's an indication of the fact that vodou is more than a religion. It's a way of life, and it's a way of life that offers great comfort. It also is a surprising key to understanding other elements in the culture. My former student and present colleague, Patrick Polk, reminded me that St. Clair in Catholicism is equated with the patron of televisions. And you can't make this stuff up. And so she presides. Now, when Haitian artists in the last half of the 20th century imagined the vodou divinities, they imagined them in terms that perhaps were best caught by the dean of Haitian painters at the end of the last century, André Pierre, who projected a voodoo pantheon in which all of the divinities are represented as various kings and queens, lords of the manor, royalty, dressed in the gowns that were taken, appropriated from the appropriators, which is to say the French colonists, and the gods redressed themselves in perfect Creole fashion, to create what is undoubtedly one of the great Creole religions of the world. But the important point I want you to take away from this image is that the gods are represented as kings and queens, and that heaven is imagined as a palace and royalty. Because then I want to turn to an image, or a couple of images, created by my friend, I think one of the great Haitian artists living today, Edouard Duval Carrier. In the image closest to me, Edouard shows those same divinities now washed up on the beach in Miami Beach, kind of refugees. You see the twinkle of Miami Beach in the background. The gods are on the move, as they've always been on the move, from Africa to Haiti, and now Haiti to Florida. They're persistent, but they're also traveling without green cards. And no more dramatic a case of that than in the far image of Erzuli, once again, the divinity who was represented by that great heart over the sleeping man. And you see here, she's the title of this painting is Erzuli Intercepté. She's intercepted by two hunky-looking border guards. And I think they're saying to her, "Madam, where's your green card?" And she's startled because she's never been asked that question before. And she's amazed by their rudeness. And as always, a very touching and very sensitive figure, she's brokenhearted. Now, of all of the divinities of Haiti, and I'm certainly not the first one to recognize this fact, the one who's closest to Haitian people in the sense of most popular, most represented in the arts, is the figure that I had mentioned earlier, the figure of death and regeneration, sometimes represented by the figure of Baron Samedi, and sometimes by his children, the Guedes. I think it was Francis Huxley who said that no loi is closer to the Haitian people than Guédé because he has no other home but the bodies of his servers. And I'm giving you two representations of those bodies in possession. The top photo taken at Port-au-Prince Cemetery. Those 2 days, November 1st and 2nd, the Days of the Dead in Haiti, are perhaps the most popular festival now in Haiti. Angelenos, I think, are peculiarly able to understand the joy that's taken in the Day of the Dead because that phenomenon is developing in our own city with the Dia de los Muertos, which is certainly one of the most fun holidays of the year in L.A. And the scene at Hollywood Forever Cemetery is not to be missed. The iconography of Guédé and the Baron is pretty constant. You see the skull and the crossbones, and you see the cadaver, a reminder that these two divinities preside over death, and death is not anything to be afraid of, to run away from. It's not only part of life, it's also a transition period. That idea of transition is picked up again in the idea of the cross. Don't mistake the cross for the Christian cross. It is the Christian cross, but simultaneously it's the crossroads, a cosmogram that's as old as Congo influence in Haiti, which is from minute one of Haitian culture. You see the black cross and the skull. You see the cross in the far image again, with Casper the friendly ghost on the altar, because as another friend of mine said, voodoo is a low budget religion, it recycles everything. Now, I believe what's happening is that voodoo is entering into a kind of Baroque period. As things have grown worse, and oh Lord, they've grown worse in Haiti over the last 10 years, the elaboration of arts, of voodoo arts, and particularly of arts devoted to the Baron Samedi and to Guédé, is extraordinary. In this particular image, which was printed in the New York Times earlier this year, in conjunction with the discussion of the plans for the In Extremis show, we're taken inside the temple of the Ungan standing there with his sword. His name is Akiki Baka, and he has been proclaimed Emperor Sanson, and has told me that he intends to turn this fabulous Vatican-like umphor into the first voodoo university. And I believe that he is the man to do it. And I should also proudly say that he has agreed to be a consultant for the In Extremis show. Images are graphic in Haiti. When I mentioned that the Balansamdi and Gede are also divinities of regeneration, that is graphically so. In the image closest to me, Gede is represented not only by the skull, but by the phallus, in something that looks to me like a military arrangement. So I'm calling this piece Gede the Happy Warrior, but I'm also suggesting that the artist is not so subtly drawing a comparison between aggression and what is sometimes called testicularity. And the far image is another, I think, indication of the comfort zone. Notice these children are gathered around the statue of Gede, not now as a male figure, but as a female figure, Gedalia, which, again, I think Angelinos would be comfortable with this image because it is so, redolent of the growing cult for the figure of La Santissima Muerte in Los Angeles, the figure of Holy Death, which has been the transformation of Our Lady of Guadalupe. And you find similar images to this Gedalia now in botanicas all over L.A. So I have one last set of images, which I think ends us on both a realistic and a happy note. You saw those terrible images of the destruction on the Grand Rue, the Rue Jean-Jacques Dessalines in Port-au-Prince, but this is after the earthquake. And this is a statue of Gede that remained standing after the earthquake in what many would probably call a miracle, that Gede presides over death. He presides over ruination, but also the promise of regeneration. And the far image is one that was actually created for the In Extremis show and which will be featured prominently in that show. It's called The Promenade of the Ballon, and it's by Edouard Duval Carrier, who did those wonderful paintings of the god stranded on Miami Beach. I particularly love this image because the Ballon, the god of death and regeneration, is walking forward into some unknown space, but he's also looking backwards. He's dragging Haitian history with him, but he's putting it into new areas full of possibilities suggested by the stars in the sky, which are also points or magic power points that suggest a transformation whose dimensions we can only imagine. Thank you.
In the absence of anyone asking a pertinent question, I want to. I was struck by the sort of relentlessly optimistic approach to the voodoo religion and to the gods, who have also, I think, a sinister side. And I do this because I'm moved to by an experience I had in this building several years ago when I came to the exhibit, which included a number of voodoo altars, which apparently were entirely genuine and realistic, except for the absence of live fire on the altars. And to make it short, I walked, after seeing things in the gallery, which were beautiful, some of them, and amusing, some of them, I, with my grandson in tow, walked into the large room which contained the altars, and the first thing I saw was a large altar entirely covered in black objects. And I didn't get any further because I, who am a convinced atheist and a believer not in spirits, was overwhelmed with the feeling that there was a presence in the room which was hostile and evil and didn't like me, and so I turned around and took my grandson out, and I have never before nor since had such an experience, and I relate it in hope of eliciting some sort of comment on it.
Well, safe to say you weren't the ideal audience for the show. Norwood, I guess. No, I can't say that. I mean, I think that there would be a portion of the Haitian population, particularly those that have converted to Pentecostalism, that might well agree with you, because the Pentecostal preachers who come inordinately from places like Alabama, in fact, equate Vodou with Satanism and the devil. I think the vast majority of Haitians, well, they talk about their divinities not so much as holy or not holy, but powerful. And they talk about them also as incorporating the right hand and the left hand. And rather than make moral judgments about those divinities, they are content that those divinities reflect the realities that they live. And I've tried to, in this presentation, make the very strong point, which I think is a very true point, that when they project divinities of death, death is never a finality. That death is always in conjunction with rebirth, and that the darkness is the darkness of the bedroom, and that new life will come. And so, you know, I think we find different dimensions to discussing good and evil, but when we look at somebody else's religion, which is often repellent if you don't belong to that religion, you ought to at least take the effort to find out where they put that line between good and evil.
Another one over here.
Hi, thank you for your presentations. I was in Haiti in September just for a week, and I wanted to find out what we were up in Mirebalais and also in Soto, and noticed the blue, the trees and some structures were painted a blue color, and our guides, an NGO there, Francoise, said that's where voodoo, you know, there's voodoo practiced. I don't know if you know why particularly it was blue, or if that's something you'd heard, or is that...
Well, blue and red are both important liturgical colors. They're generally equated with Ogun, who is the military power in the Vodou pantheon, but it's also the national colors. And I remember going during several festival periods where people would paint their trees blue and red. But also trees themselves are understood to be reposoirs or holders of spirit. And so oftentimes trees are regarded as living altars. And so I can't tell you why the tree was painted only blue, but I hope I've thrown out some suggestions.
I think we're going to have to move on, and there'll be time after further elaboration. Thank you both.
It was January 12th, 2010, at 4:53 p.m. An earthquake of 7.1 magnitude hit the island of Haiti. Expert geologists stated there was a rift in the land that caused this unparalleled disaster. But the world entire knows that this catastrophe, which killed nearly 300,000 people, did not happen because the earth broke, but rather because we broke our promise to be our brother's keeper. Underneath the beauty was a rift. At the heart of the land was a rift. And the rift in the land reached the rift in our heart. And we lost our people and the land. It is believed that the cholera epidemic, which struck Haiti since October of 2010, and to this day caused more than 4,000 deaths, occurred because there was the irresponsible dumping of human excrement into the Artibonite River system by the Nepalese contingent of the Minista forces in Haiti. Water, so rare, so precious a treasure in Haiti, has become a poison water, sweet poison changing color, death seeping into my dreams, water, water, sweet poison changing color, draining its dark stench, bowel green, rice water gray as the empty sky, as corpses I travel over, no libera, no requiem, no liberame domine. Corpses, soaked and dissolved in water, gray rice water, bowel green, seeping, bleeding, drenching, flooding into this island of ceaseless wonders, closed, open to the seawater and the Artibonite River. Oh, I would like to float, even on a purple boat, away from these senseless sorrows I carry, my back breaking from the grievous load of life denied, withheld, and death without ritual or funeral. Through much whispering and loneliness, love sickness, home sickness, water sickness, oh my island of endless distress, bathed in shit water. No metaphor will do. Sometimes I am dazzled by your beauty, but you are a lump of sadness in my throat. It is gray outside. Dead gray sky. Wind flapping sheets, spreading the smell of death from a woman like me, unlike me, soaking the dark dirt with bowel green water, rice water gray, till it reaches the bowels of the earth, till relentlessly life comes to a standstill, leaving her with sunken, sightless eyes and shriveled skin. My island of seven plagues and maladies, holding me and my memories in a slow, swelling blister of waste, oozing solid liquid. My island of cyclical crises. I love you through the stench of death, as if devoid of the sense of smell, as others void bowel green water, rice water gray, soaking you in shit water.
Sayo, Ogunno, Diabla diab mose moi si sa vre, pa fout vre, sa se jouet imunio, sa se blag, Ogunno.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.